Thank you, everyone, for joining our podcast on the proposed consumer duty. My name is Thomas Morrison. I'm a principal associate in Shoesmith's financial services team, and I specialise in retail banking, lending and payments. I'm joined today by Sam Tyfield, who's a partner specialising in wholesale financial services market. And Sam has worked in the past both in drafting and consulting on pieces of EU financial services legislation. Today, we're going to talk about the FCA's consultation on consumer duty. For those of you who haven't read the consultation paper, it is worth reading, and you can find a copy on the FCA website. It's consultation paper 2113. Also on the FCA website, you'll find a recording of a recent webinar that the FCA gave talking through the consumer duty. At Shoesmiths, we formed a working party to consider the consultation and to work with our clients and understand how this will affect their business, their culture, the processes and the documentation going forward. I'll start by giving a brief overview of the key proposals. After that, Sam and I will share some of our initial thoughts on the proposals in terms of how they could apply to financial services firms, both at a general level and in particular sectors. And we'll draw on some of the discussions we've already been having with clients. So, why is a consumer duty needed? Well, as you know, we already have Principle 6 and Principle 7. Principle 6 requires firms to pay due regard to the interests of the customers and to treat them fairly. Principle 7 says that firms must pay due regard to the information needs of their clients and communicate information to them in a way which is clear, fair, and not misleading. In recent years, the FCA has intervened in various markets where it believes that consumers are not obtaining the right outcome. Just to call up a couple of examples, we had the high-cost credit review. There, the FCA made interventions in relation to high-cost short-term credit products and also set new rules on how interest rates and fees would be calculated and published for arranged and unarranged overdrafts. The FCA has also done work on mortgage prisoners, i.e. people who are keeping up with their mortgage payments but are still unable to switch products. And the FCA ended up making changes to its responsible lending rules to make that easier. In the savings market, we know that the FCA was proposing a single easy access rate for cash savers, although that's been put aside for now. And then the final example is in relation to general insurance, where the FCA has carried out a thematic review and published guidance relating to distribution chains. And there was also the FCA's recent market study and pricing remedy to address consumer loyalty penalties. The FCA's conclusions from these reviews and interventions is that Principle 6 and 7 and the requirement to treat customers fairly have had positive impacts. However, the outcomes for consumers have not always been consistently good. The FCA is concerned that even although firms may comply with the legal and regulatory requirements they have to, consumers are still not getting good outcomes in all the situations where they should. For example, information may be misleading or difficult to understand, which makes it hard for consumers to assess what's on offer and to make the right decisions for them. Firms control the information flow to consumers, so there is a concern that information asymmetry could hinder the consumer's ability to act and make the right decisions. Moreover, products may not be fit for purpose in the sense that they don't deliver the expected outcomes for consumers or aren't focused on the right target markets. Products may also represent poor value for money in the sense that there's either little or no correlation between the price the consumer pays and the benefits or outcomes that the consumer should reasonably be expected to receive. An additional concern is that consumer service is poor in some cases, and that can hinder consumers from achieving the right outcomes post-sale. Examples include complaints processes, which may be onerous, or consumers facing unreasonable obstacles to exiting or switching a product or service where it's in their interest to do so. A final concern that the AFCA mentioned is that firms are very good at building data on consumer behaviour, and they may use this to rely on inherent behavioural biases and customer inertia, examples being customers not switching products when it's in their interests. So, what will the consumer duty do to address this? Well, before I get into that, I should mention that although we're talking about a consumer duty, the duty will apply to protect retail clients, which is a definition in the FCA glossary, and it extends to include business customers, including SMEs. There are some exclusions. I'll come back to that scope point later at the end of my segment. So the FCA is proposing to introduce a package of measures. These will consist of a new principle, cross-cutting rules, new outcomes, and supplementary rules and guidance. And the aim of this package will be to provide greater clarity to firms about FCA expectations. The FCA has been at pains to emphasise that this is a significant shift in culture and behaviour. In fact, they call it a paradigm shift. There'll be a focus on consumer outcomes and ongoing assessment and monitoring throughout the whole customer journey. And the expectation is that firms will get things right first time so that the FCA won't have to carry out such wide sector-facing interventions. The FCA's aim through the Consumer Duty is to introduce higher standards than exist at present. That will mean a higher standard of care than Principle 6 and duties to provide information which go beyond Principle 7. Firms will be expected to consider whether the right consumer outcomes are being achieved throughout the journey, as I mentioned. And this starts with product inception and design, and then it continues through the delivery and distribution channels that you choose to market your product. Then goes on to engagement with the consumer and the consumer signing up for your product. And then finally on to after sales service. And what the FCA is really looking for here is people asking themselves, would I be happy to be treated in the way my firm treats its customers? Or would I recommend my firm's products and services to my friends and family? The FCA has also stressed that the consumer duty goes beyond making sure that your documentation, policies and processes meet legal and compliance requirements. The consumer duty will oblige you to focus less on box ticking and more on using your judgment to determine whether good consumer outcomes result. Before finishing on this general overview, I should say it's important to note that the FCA doesn't intend the consumer duty to shift the balance of responsibility in favour of consumers. The FCA has said that consumers will still be responsible for their decisions, but they can only assume that responsibility if the conditions are right to enable them to do so. So I'll talk a little bit more about how the consumer duty will work. The FCA envisages a pyramid with three tiers. The top tier is this new consumer principle, and that's intended to underpin all of your conduct and culture going forward. And it will apply in situations even if the cross-cutting rules, the outcomes, or the guidance don't appear to offer an answer. The FCA is consulting on two versions of the consumer principle. It's stressed that these are not regarded as being substantially different. They just have a difference in tone. So the first formulation is that a firm must act to deliver good outcomes for retail clients. The focus on good outcomes, as we've already mentioned a few times. The second formulation is that a firm must act in the best interests of retail clients. And in this instance, the FCA has explained that the reference to best interest doesn't introduce a fiduciary duty, which is reassuring. As part of the consultation, the FCA is considering whether the consumer principle should be additive, i.e. it supplements and enhances Principle 6, or whether it will actually replace it. The second tier of the pyramid involves three cross-cutting rules. They're called cross-cutting because they'll cut across the handbook rules and guidance, so they should be considered in all instances. Rule one is that firms must take all reasonable steps to avoid causing foreseeable harm to consumers. The FCA expects firms to take proactive steps to avoid that harm where it's in the firm's control to do so, and that's an important point which I'll come back to. Moreover, firms shouldn't seek to exploit customer vulnerabilities, behavioural biases or lack of knowledge. The FCA does acknowledge that bad outcomes may occur which are outside the firm's control, hence my reference to that. It could be because circumstances are unforeseeable. It could be because of a decision that the consumer takes, or it could be because the product inherently involves a degree of financial risk which the firm reasonably believed the consumer understood and accepted. It's not entirely clear what's meant by the word foreseeable in the context of foreseeable harm. The FCA has said it will assess the need to take reasonable steps on an objective basis, which could imply an objective test of reasonableness. However, given the obligation of firms to understand the product, services and target markets, it does seem to me that it would be likely that firms could be held to a subjective standard of foreseeability. And what that means is that a firm will be obliged to avoid causing harm to consumers, which it, through its own specific knowledge of the market, its products and services, and its customer base, could reasonably foresee. However, it would be helpful if the FCA, when it follows up in the consultation, could clarify what foreseeable is meant to mean in this context. Cross-cutting rule two is that firms must take all reasonable steps to enable customers to pursue their financial objectives. The FCA sees this as meaning that firms must understand their customers, including any behavioural biases and vulnerabilities, and ensure that they establish an environment in which consumers can make decisions and act in their own interests. And the final cross-cutting rule, rule three, is that firms must act in good faith towards their customers. What the FCA expects here is honesty, fair and open dealing, and consistency with consumer reasonable expectations. I've mentioned reasonableness, and the FCA has said it's proposing to embed a principle of reasonableness in the consumer duty. The FCA will set out factors which it believes will influence what is reasonable, but there are some mentioned in the consultation paper. I only have time to mention a couple, but just to give you a flavour of these, the nature of the firm's relationship with the customer will be relevant. Obviously, there is a big difference in terms of the duty, depending on whether a firm is advising a customer on a particular product or service or proceeding on a non-advised or execution-only basis. Similarly, the potential of the product or service to cause harm is relevant. Obviously, the riskier the product, the more the duty is to take reasonable steps to ensure that good outcomes are met. And the same applies for the complexity of the product or service. Going back to the FCA's pyramid, the final tier, the third tier, involves four outcomes. These are outlined in the consultation paper, but the FCA proposes to explain the expectations in a suite of rules and guidance. So the four outcomes are as follows. The first outcome concerns communications. Communications should equip consumers to make effective, timely, and properly informed decisions about their financial products and services. The FCA has an abhorrence of sludge practices which hinder effective decision-making and contribute to poor outcomes. The second outcome is that products and services are specifically designed to meet the needs of consumers and are sold to those consumers whose needs they meet. What this means here is that firms must identify their target markets when designing products and services, ensure that they're sold to that target market, and of course that they meet the needs of that target market. In this respect, the FCA has said it intends to transpose key elements of its product intervention and product governance sourcebook known as PROD, and apply those across retail products more widely. The third outcome is that customer service meets the needs of consumers and it enables them to realise the benefits of the products and services and act in their interest without undue hindrance. The reference to undue hindrance is a return again to the FCA's abhorrence of sludge practices, for example, processes which make it difficult for consumers to complain or to exit or cancel products or to stop automatic rollover or renewal of products such as annual insurance cover. The final outcome concerns the price of products and services, and the FCA said that the price in products or services should represent fair value. It is not seeking to apply price caps here or make price interventions unless it becomes absolutely necessary. Instead, what the FCA is expecting firms to do is give more consideration both to price and the role it plays in the fair value of products and services. This distinction between price and fair value is deliberate. The FCA recognises that it can be difficult for consumers to assess the value they receive from a product or service, both in terms of the price they pay, but also in terms of the benefits or outcomes they receive. Before I finish my segment, I'm going to talk briefly about the FCA's consultation on a private right of action. The FCA has asking whether consumers should have a private right of action, i.e. a right to raise legal action for breach of the consumer principle. The consultation paper does explore the benefits and disadvantages of this, and I would recommend you read those. Understandably, to take one example, one concern raised today has been that claims management companies could see this as a new business opportunity, which would then result in an influx of private rights of action for breach of consumer principles. And we may come to that in the second segment. Finally, I'll just return to a couple of issues on scope. I talked earlier that the consumer duty applied to retail clients, which could include SMEs and other businesses. The extension to retail clients doesn't, however, mean that the FCA is going to extend the scope of activities it regulates. So by that, I mean, if the FCA regulates an activity only in relation to consumers, the consumer duty will only apply to consumers. To give a couple of concrete examples, if you are a regulated mortgage provider, and you also do business buy-to-let mortgages, well, those are not regulated, so the consumer duty would not apply to how you provide those going forward. By contrast, if you provide current accounts or savings accounts, then the banking conduct business source book applies to banking customers, which is defined to include microenterprises and small charities. They will almost certainly fall within the definition of retail clients. So banks and building societies will have to consider the application of the consumer duty to SME customers. And a similar consideration applies to banks, building societies, and payment institutions when providing payment services. Finally, in my segment, the FCA recognises that many products are the result of a chain. It could be a manufacturing, distribution, or supply chain. And there may be firms in that chain who have no direct relationship with the end consumer and therefore no consumer duty. In those situations, the FCA expects the consumer duty to apply where a firm can influence others in that chain. The key variable here will be the extent to which the firm on which the consumer duty falls can influence others in the chain. We'll come back to that later, I hope, but for now, I'm going to invite Sam to join the discussion.